Okay, so remember the first 10 prokim essentially were about all of the various halachas that we had that had to do with the special considerations of Kli Cheres. Now, those issues were so different than other kelim, including the fact that there are Kli Cheres that are only metame when they're connected to the ground, which is the opposite of the normal kelim, and that, which of course I'm talking about a tanur, a kiraim, and the idea that Kli
Cheres.
Oh. Well, I forgot to turn off the... I'll ask Benny to split. I forgot to turn off the other recording. I'll turn on this one.
You want the Zoom recording, though?
Yeah, I'll record. I'll record. Yeah, I mean, but... Okay, so conceptually speaking, back to Kalim. So the first 10 Prokem, we were talking about the special dinim of the Kli Cheres, and that had all types of amazing new issues, and the most striking one was the special dinim of Tanur V'Kirayim, which, of course, is where the Torah begins. And those issues include the fact that a Kli Cheres can be connected, sometimes only Tomei if it is connected to the ground, as opposed to everything else, which is Torah when it's connected to the ground. A Kli Cheres can only be Metamei from its inside. It's not Mekabel Tomei B'chutz at all, except for the fact that we had a din of Achurayim and so on, difference between Achurayim and V'toch, when it came to Mashkim, that was a special situation that had to do with Mashkim Tmeim that are a Gezeirah D'Rabbanan. And then we had the special halacha, you can't be mitire a Kli Cheres by putting in a mikvah. The only tire that would have would be actual Shvira. And that's why the other Kalim are called Kli Shetef, which means Kalim that can be washed off, meaning, so to speak, by putting them into the mikveh, which cannot do over here. The different shiurim, of course, is what we spoke about. What's considered to be breakage, what's considered to be usable in terms of broken pieces of cheres. Remember, broken pieces of cheres were very popular to use for different things, such as keeping something propped or keeping a bed propped up and evening things out. This was the most common thing that you use. It was found all over the place. And so we had the idea of gistera. What size of a gistera is considered gistera, meaning the broken piece, what size is usable. Then we had to define precisely what's called the inside part or what's called the outside part, where we have complex construction, and we have also a thick wall, we have insulation. How much of that area of the insulation would be considered to be the inside? How much is considered to be the outside? Discussions of whether types of mechitzot in the middle of large Kli Cheres are considered to actually break it up into two different parts or not. Does it have to really be two different Kli Cheres? What is considered to be toch and what is considered to be toch tocho? Where do we have the mixture of inner spaces of a Kli Cheres? And you'll notice the interrelationship of one of the issues of Kli Cheres, which has to do with space and why it's connected to Shabbos and how many amazing references we have to Kalim throughout Shabbos and Erevin. Part of the reason is the spatial considerations of Kli Cheres, and we closed with the special status of Kli Cheres in terms of Tzomid Pasil. And that ended up being the special status of Tzomid Pasil with the Kli Cheres, which is a whole section in the Torah, is the Gezeira that we made min Rabbanan, that you cannot be Matzil Kalim inside of a Kli Cheres, Mukav Tzomid Pasil, simply because anything Tomei is not Matzil in a Tzomid Pasil, and an Amma Aretz will assume that his Kli is Tar. Because of that, we will never be able to utilize Kalim from an Amma Aretz. Therefore, in order to rectify that, we made everybody believe, which was completely ridiculous, but we made everybody believe that a Kli Cheres is, that Tzomid Pasil will not be Matzil Kalim Betocha. Then we moved on for the next four prokem, really, to discuss the dinim of essentially Kli Matachot. And what is special about metallic Kalim? We talked about the special status of metallic Kalim, the main, very powerful special issue was, of course, the din of Tuma Yishana, that the Chozrin le Tuma Tama Yishana, which means that you can actually recreate the Tuma by recreating the Kli. This, of course, is a Gzeira D'Rabbanan. And the question is, how far does it extend when you say that it's going to be Chozrin le Tuma Tama Yishana? Would it literally recreate the Tuma that was there before, such as that if I had, let us say, something that was Tamei Meis, and I had put it through a Hazoya, the first Hazoya, So now when it recreates itself, is it now recreated to be on, let us say, the fourth day from the original Tumah and one day away from its first Hazoya? I mean, is it Ad Kedei Kacha recreation? Or is it simply recreating the fact that it's Tameh? Or is it recreating the level of the Tumah? All of these things were ended up being machlokas, and we spoke about yesterday when we closed the sugya about whether you can actually do a Hazoya on the same day that you do the recreation, which was fascinating. Also, there were a lot of discussion about compound kaling, where very often you have a metallic part of the kli, and then you have another piece of the kli. And the question of defining, okay, what is the most important part of the kli that will define it, that was important in many of the Mishnayos. And the issue of a kli that has a shem bifnei atzmo being considered to be a kli for a matechet, and one very fascinating other issue, which is that if it doesn't have a shem bifnei atzmo, it still has the advantages or disadvantages, if you wish, to be mekabel tumah if it has that minimal definition of a kli that is common to all other kelim, namely, it has a beit kibul. So when it comes to kli matechet, what's unique is it doesn't need a beit kibul, and it's chosen the tumah yeshana, and it still is like the other kelim that if it does have a beit kibul, it will be mekabel tumah, despite the fact that it doesn't have a shem bifnei atzmo. Okay, that covered us basically until 14. Okay, then going on from 14 onwards, so we had a discussion of one parak that talked about the dinim of all of the other kelim in terms of pshutim. So we had the pshute kliyetz and the pshute klior and all besides matechas pshute zechuchis even because of the rabbanon gezeira and etzem or material and so on and so forth. And that raised the idea of something that is too big to move. That brought us up to the sugya that we just had in Erevin about the Yam Shel Shlomo. What is too big to move? Something which holds a bait of two sa'ah. So it's the equivalent of the seeds that you would take to seed a bait sa'ah. And we talked about the Godesh on dry kalim, which we also had learned out from Yam Shel Shlomo, the stira of Shloshet Alafim Bat and the Alpayim Bat. So we talk about the Godesh as well in what the shear is of immovable. Then we had different questions of single time usage of kelim and things that are just covers for kelim, even though they can hold things, what their status is. We then had a discussion of what is considered to be a gemar kli, which was very different for kli matechet as well, because of the high quality of kli matechet, it's considered to be a golem until it's actually polished and usable, as opposed to most other kelim. Well, we had the machlokes at Chulin about expensive kelim, such as bone china, because it was a question whether it's the expense or whether it's the beauty that defines the extended status of golem that we talked about. And then we have a perek that discusses the way in which there's a difference between kelim that would be used by different people. Professionals use kelim in one way that householders don't. And therefore, just the name of a kli is not going to be enough for you to determine whether it's considered to be a kli. Because, I mean, the way that a professional uses a kli, he may use it in ways that allow him to replace pieces as a matter of course. Maybe he may be replacing, let's say, a mesh filter, which is one of the actual examples in the parak, mesh filter replacements, which a householder doesn't even know how to do. And a guy who's a professional may be doing it 10 times a day. He doesn't need to recall it to call any repairman to him. That's the kli. So obvious differences like that. We even spoke about the curious differences between the musical instruments that are used by professionals or the levium and musical instruments that are used just by people going around cheapo playing things and waiting for people to throw them money. And then we've got the issue, we've got a perek, a beautiful perek, Perek Yud Zayin, that describes all of the different shiurim, all from many, many different ways, how we are modei shiurim. Because, of course, we started about the zesim and the rimon and the kamotzi rimon, but that got us to the other shiurim about a grow garret, which was okay on Shabbos, and how we measure that, and a kizayit, and the difference of shiurim lagabituma by mace, kisaora, kiadasha in terms of Sheretz, what the Ovi Mardea was in terms of mikvos. How do we measure an Amma? What are the difference between the Midas Lach V'Yovish, which we just spoke about a little bit? What's the shear of a Kometz in the Beis HaMikdash? What's the shear of Moloch Chofnav on Yom HaKippurim? What's the shear of Moloch Lugmav in terms of eating on Yom HaKippurim? What's the shear of Shtei Se'udas for an Erev, or Shtei Se'udas in the other dinim that we apply it to in the terms of Tchumim? What about Tumas HaMeis for Moloch Tarvat? What about the shear of a Kotevat HaGasa for Yom HaKippurim? What about the din of Chisorin Beshidra, which is measured by a surgeon's, a brain surgeon's drill? So on. All of these things are measured all in that one parak, which is parak 17, and that brought us up to various types of issues that would be nogea mechanisms, where things fit together and work in particular ways. What type of issues are a one kli because it's one machine. So this, we had all these, we started off with the simple, the diaspora machine that does the weaving and so on and so forth. And we also discussed the different parts of single things in terms of being tayable them or in terms of their retaining their tuma and their gradual replacement. Interestingly enough, that put tefillin shel rosh in the same context as a bed. Which is very interesting, because you could have dinim where you replace the pieces slowly. So let's say one of the batim of the tefillah gets busted, one of the sides of the bed gets busted. It was tummy. How long does it retain the tumah? When does it flip? So where is basically the point of the tipping point where it's only considered to be something that was nogea in itself and then could be metame, the new part that's coming from the negia in itself? It's very fascinating. So we had like a whole parak discussing those types of amazing issues. And then there's a question of taking a bed apart temporarily. So whether it was for, in terms of putting it into a mikveh or putting it back together, does it lose its tuma? Can you do it in separate pieces? And then what is the din of every type of thing that is made from a material that you fill up? So we started with baseballs. It's actually called Hakadur is the name of the parak. So you make a baseball by taking leather and you fill it up with whatever you fill it up, and then you sew it up. What is the din of that type of thing? The kli is what's considered to be the inside, what's considered to be outside, and all of the issues of mattresses on beds, or if you've got on your couch, you've got these things that, what do you call them? What do you call those square things on the couch, you know, that you lean back on? Oh, gosh. Yes, thank you. Aphasia is glorious. So, yes, things like cushions and baseballs and mattresses, all of those were get us through the 20th parak, and I'll send you up the next week, the next 10 parakim, Bezrat Hashem.